One of the things that the Proverbs do as they help us look at life is they help us to see sometimes the same subject from little different vantage points. And as we look at things in a little different light, it makes us think about them in some different ways. We have a great example of that in Proverbs chapter 27, which is where we are this morning. So open your Bibles, if you would, to Proverbs chapter 27. I want to begin in verse 2. Proverbs 27, verse 2. The wise man says, "Let another praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips." Let another praise you, not your own mouth. Honking our own horn, as we sometimes call this. And sometimes people are just very brazen about this, about telling you how great they are or what great things they've done or whatever. Most of us are a little more subtle about it than that. And yet there are little subtle ways in which we try to slide something across that maybe try to impress somebody a little bit. There's a fellow with a string of degrees that every time he signs his name, he has to put all those, you know, initials out there beside it of all those things that he's accomplished. There's the person who just kind of slips in once in a while the people that they have known that are important through the years or little things they've accomplished. I remember several years ago I was preaching in another state and we were having a gospel meeting and we had the preacher over for dinner one night and had several other families there. And I just got to noticing that it seemed like no matter what the subject was that came up, the visiting preacher was kind of an expert on that and he had a good bit to say. And every time somebody at the table would tell a story, he'd have one that would top that. And by the time it was all over with, I didn't have as good of impression as I had before the supper began. Because it just kind of seemed like there was a little too much of letting his own mouth praise him. And the wise man cautions us against that. It's not a good thing. You know, there's a very close cousin to this, which is self-deprecating statements that we make with a hope that somebody will correct that and give us praise. "Oh, I'm no good at such and such." To which somebody says, "Oh, don't say that about yourself. You're really good." We do those things. That's just kind of another way of calling attention to ourselves. And maybe it's not always what we say, it's how we say it sometimes. Well, what's the problem with all that? What's the problem with letting others know how great you are? Well, I'll tell you, there's several problems with that. First of all, it comes from a notoriously unreliable source, self-praise does. We're just not very good self-assessors sometimes. The Lord observed that. Remember His statement in the Sermon on the Mount of Matthew chapter 7? He asked, why is it that we're able to see the speck in our brother's eye, but we can't see the log that's in our own eye? We're not real objective sometimes when it comes to looking at ourselves. And so we're probably a little bit biased, not a very good source. But maybe even more to the point, it reflects a wrong focus. Our focus is not supposed to be on ourselves. Our focus is not supposed to be on drawing attention from others to ourselves. Our focus needs to be on God. And then our focus needs to be on others and what we can do of service rather than having others praise us. And one of the things about self-praise, there's kind of an irony to it. It's really self-defeating. I mean, the purpose of it is to make people think more highly of us. But if we start to get carried away with this, instead of thinking more highly of us, they're going to think a lot less of us. And even facts that we could honestly boast about, things that really are some good points that we have, even those get clouded as people get turned off by that sense of pride and arrogance. And that's, of course, the other problem with it, is this is exactly opposite the spirit that the Lord commends. James said in James chapter 4 that God is opposed to the proud, gives grace to the humble. Let's listen for just a few moments to an illustration that Jesus gave in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 14. Luke chapter 14. Jesus gave us a little caution about this. Luke 14, verse 8. The Lord said, when you're invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor. For someone more distinguished than you may have been invited by him, and he who invited you both will come and say to you, give your place to this man. And then in disgrace, you proceed to occupy the last place. But when you are invited, go and recline at the last place, so that when the one who has invited you comes, he may say to you, friend, move up higher. Then you will have honor in the sight of all who are at table with you. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. And it's certainly not the spirit of what the Lord said to purposely seek the lowest places possible with the intent of somebody trying to honor us in the presence of the crowd. He's just saying, don't try to advance yourself. He's saying exactly what the wise man said 1,000 years before him. Let another praise you and not your own mouth. Now, having said that, having talked about in verse 2 the benefit of having someone else praise you, a little later on in the chapter, he cautions about this. Look down at verse 21 of Proverbs chapter 27. Proverbs 27, verse 21 says, the crucible is for silver and the furnace for gold, and each is tested by the praise accorded him. A crucible is a pot, a melting pot. It's a pot in which metals are melted, and they're melted with two things in view. Number one, of removing impurities from them, but also creating new products by combining metals that are melted together. And so we talk sometimes about things being forged in the crucible. And then the word crucible comes to be kind of just a symbol of a test that someone has passed through. And the wise man said, that's what happens when somebody else praises you. Now, in verse 2, he said, don't be praising yourself, let someone else do it. Now he cautions in this text, but when somebody else does that, it's a test. It's a challenge to us. There's another proverb earlier in the book, I think it's Proverbs 17, about verse 5, where the wise man had used the same kind of a figure of the crucible being for silver and gold, that he said, but the Lord tests hearts. Well, here he said, the crucible's for silver and gold, and each one is tested by the praise accorded him. So that must be one of the ways in which the Lord does that, one of the ways in which he tests our hearts. So let's think about that for a moment. How is it that praise coming from other people tests our hearts? Well, I would suggest three things under that category. First of all, it tests us if we stop and ask ourselves, whose praise is it that I value anyway? Whose compliments mean the most to me? If I'm just thinking about people, what people am I interested in? They think highly of me, that they're impressed by something about what I'm doing. Is it just the folks in the neighborhood? Just kind of the worldly crowd in general? Would it be those that are the trendsetters in society, the award givers and all that? Is that the crowd that I really want to try to please? Or is it more important for me, for godly people, to think highly of me? That's a good question for us to ask. And of course, the more fundamental question than that is, whose praise am I really interested in anyway? Is it man's or God's? In the book of Galatians, chapter 1 and verse 10, Paul raised that very question with reference to his work of preaching. He asked, who am I trying to please? Am I trying to please men? Or am I trying to please God? And in the first Corinthian letter, he pointed out to us that the fact that we are commended by somebody else, and in fact even that we might be able to commend ourselves about something, doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot. Listen, in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 3, the apostle said to me, "It's a very small thing that I be examined by you or by any human court. In fact, I do not even examine myself. For I'm conscious of nothing against myself, yet I'm not by this acquitted. But the one who examines me is the Lord." That's the one whose praise we ought to be concerned about. So how does praise test us? Well, first of all, it maybe just make us stop and think, if my neighbor is the person that I'm really concerned about what he thinks about me, about whatever it is, and if I'm more concerned about what the other kids at school think than what God thinks, I may need to rethink what my attitude is about all. And then second, I might ask myself, what praise do I? What kind of things do I want to be complimented for anyway? What is it that I want people to think of when they think about me? In 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 3 and 4, Peter just cautioned the ladies that their adornment ought not to be merely external things, putting on dresses and hair and all that sort of thing. They said, let it be with the hidden person, the hidden character. It's in the heart. And he said, that's precious in the sight of God. It's flattering to any of us, I guess, for folks to say, hey, you're looking nice today. Kind of makes us feel better about things, but is that really what I want to be known for? Do I want to be known just because I'm a funny guy? Do I want to be known just because I maybe have some stuff? Or do I want to be known for character? Because I know how to behave myself. Because somebody can count on me. Because I've been of service. Those are the kinds of things that we want to be praised for, not things that are empty. And so praise tests us not only in terms of thinking about whose praise do we really value, but also what kind of praise do we value? What kind of compliments mean the most to me when I get one? And then, of course, the other thing is, how do I respond to praise? That becomes the real question, and that's probably the special point that the wise man is making here when he says that praise tests us. And we had a great illustration of this in our Bible class just a couple of weeks ago. In fact, this was past week when we were talking about Saul. Old King Saul started out as a very good man. He was a humble man up front. But over time, he started to let that position that he was in, that kingship, probably some of the praise that he was getting, because some of that started going to his head a little bit. And then David came along and slew the giant Goliath that Saul was afraid to go up against personally, and so was anyone else in Israel. And then David began to advance in Israel, and Saul would put him out on a number of military expeditions, and David would come back successfully every time. And the women would go out to greet them, and they would sing, "Saul has slain his thousands." That's praise. Until they would also add, "And David his 10,000s." And now all of a sudden, the praise, or in Saul's case, the praise that he wasn't getting, became problematic to him. And he developed a rotten attitude toward David. And all of that just led to his downfall. So how I respond to praise must be critical as well. Do I take it in stride? Do I maybe even think of it as a challenge? Well, if folks think of me in that good light, I need to work really hard to live up to that reputation that some are saying that I have? Do I take it as a challenge in that way, or do I let it become kind of a matter of conceit with me, as Saul evidently did? It's those kinds of questions that caused the wise man to say the crucible's for silver, furnace for gold, and each is tested by the praise accorded to him. Well, let's back up and look at one more in this 27th chapter. This one's not about praise. This one's something altogether different. Proverbs 27, verse 7, I want you to look at with me. Proverbs 27, verse 7 says, "A sated man loathes honey, but to a famished man, any bitter thing is sweet." A sated man. The word sated, just kind of short for satisfied, but it typically suggests especially somebody who is satisfied to the fullest degree, almost to excess, someone who's gorged, as it were. And so you think of this man who has so much to eat, he has such abundance, that he is just literally stuffed. And he eats this good stuff all the time, and he's just, well, to use the wise man's word, he's sated. And even something that's as sweet as honey, to him, just doesn't mean a whole lot. Because he's so gorged all the time on everything else. In contrast to that, you've got a poor man over here who can't afford much of anything. He's not even necessarily longing for honey. To him, any old thing that comes along tastes sweet. Just something to eat would be fine. Something would be great. When we were on a trip last fall, I don't know whether I've told you this or not, we went into a McDonald's in downtown Boston for breakfast one morning. We just wanted to grab an Egg McMuffin or something and get to our tourist business. And while we were there, I was just finished up eating. This fellow came in, kind of ragged looking, and was asking if I would buy him breakfast. He was hungry. Well, he looked like he hadn't had much to eat, though. I said, "Sure, I'll buy you some breakfast." So I went up to the counter, and I started to order for him exactly what I had just finished. And he pointed up and said, "No, I want the big breakfast with the coffee and everything." And I looked at him, I said, "No, you're going to get exactly what I had." I don't think that fellow met the second criteria. I don't think he was really famished when it all was said and done. But anyway, if he were really hungry, anything would have done, right? Okay, here's the point of the proverb. First of all, it makes the point that there are inequities in life, that there are people who have so much that they are sated. There are other people who have so little that any good thing would be great with them. And maybe there's an implication in the proverb that we need to try to address that somehow and do what we can to alleviate that. But the proverb, to me, really calls on us to think about where we are in life and how we look at things in view of that. In other words, it's a proverb about appreciation. Because the rich man just doesn't have any appreciation even for honey, because he's got so much, this full man, and the other fella, he'd appreciate anything that came his way. So maybe it's just a little reminder that with the different places that we are in life come some really different perspectives on things. And we don't want to lose our way. And because we get more, get to where we really don't appreciate the things that we have. And let's make three applications of that. The obvious one that would come from the proverb would be appreciation of things in the material realm. Sometimes it seems as though the more we get, the less we appreciate what we have. The more we want something else. The author of Hebrews cautioned us in Hebrews 13 and verse 4 to be sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. And then he went on to couple that contentment with the assurance from God that he would take care of us. So let's just remember that. Paul said in writing to Timothy, having food and clothing, with these we'll be content. Well, let's also make an application of it to our families as well. It's easy enough for us in our families to focus on things that we wish were a little different. Sandy could probably give you a list of things that need to be different. Any husband, any wife could tell you a couple of things that they wish were a little different. Some parents could tell you some things that were a little different about their children if they had their way. And the children surely have some ideas about the parents, about some things that they wish mom and dad would do a little differently than they do. But let's not get so focused on that that we lose our appreciation for what a blessing we have in our families. Because you don't have to look around very far to find somebody that is in a miserable circumstance family-wise compared to yours. Back in Proverbs chapter 12, in verse 4, the wise man said, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who shames him is like rottenness in his bones. I'm guessing if I ask, almost everyone in here knows someone whose spouse is pretty close to that second description in that verse. Somebody that's a real problem. Not just because there's a couple little things you wish were different, but somebody's a major problem. Proverbs 17, verse 25 says, a foolish son is a grief to his father and a bitterness to her who bore him. So in Proverbs 17:25, the author reminds us that there's some people that got major children problems. And maybe yours aren't perfect, mine aren't perfect. But let's be grateful for what we have and what a benefit they are. And the third application I'll make of that is to the congregation. There's no such thing as a perfect church, a perfect local church. We've got some deficiencies. We've got them here at Viking Drive. Every church I've ever been a part of has got them. They're not always the same ones, but there's some things we could do better. And we need to work on that. But while we're working on the things that we could do better, let's not lose sight of the things that are really good. And sometimes you don't need to do much other than go on vacation and visit a couple of other places for a few weeks so you can come to really appreciate how it is back home and some of the good things that are there. And so the wise man cautions us in this little simple statement of Proverbs 27, verse 7. To be appreciative of what we have. When I think about that last statement, to a famished man, any bitter thing is sweet, I can't help but think also of a spiritual application of the Lord's statement in the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes, that it's the one who's hungering and thirsting for righteousness who will be filled. And I will just there caution to that. That's the sentiment we need to have, but let's not just settle for any bitter thing that comes along. Let's look for the truth and let's appreciate the great truth that we have in Christ. Let's close this morning with a psalm. We haven't done that for a few weeks. I thought we'd sing the first verse of Sweeter as the Years Go By. Because this is the song in the verse. It talks about some of the blessings that we have in the Lord. And in the chorus it talks about how that as time goes on we just appreciate them more and more. That's the way it needs to be. And I hope that will be our disposition. One verse of this song and then we'll be dismissed.